Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 131 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty good. I am just back from a vacation. I'm all nice and rested. I've had a delicious cup of tea, and I'm raring to go. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good as well. Lots of things going on, lots of real life stuff, but it's always nice to sit down and talk a little bit of RPGs, tabletop RPGs with you.
Yeah.
And boy, do we have some good stuff to talk about tonight.
And some and weird I say, stuff.
When I say good stuff, I mean bad stuff, in both senses of the word.
Well, you know,
in some ways it's weird.
Well, to start off with, how do you feel about your new precognitive powers?
Very good. I should have gone out and bought a lotto ticket.
Okay, now we can start our pre-crime division. All murders will stop. There's going to be, you know, carved wooden. Never mind. Anyways.
We'll meet Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Oh, good movie. Anyway, sorry.
Yep. So for those of you who listened to last episode, you may recall that we talked a little bit about the launch of Sigil, which is the new virtual tabletop 3D Unreal Engine powered builder that you can then use to make your maps and bring your people in and kind of play it like a video game, or like there's miniatures there in front of you.
Yeah, virtually. Virtual miniatures for a tabletop, as VTT suggests.
Well, too bad.
No. First of all, it's still there. But I think it's pretty much that's what you're going to get. Nothing more.
So, but a few days ago, the news came out that approximately 90% of the team responsible for building Sigil was let go shortly after the system's public launch.
Yeah, it was like about a week after or something. Like it was very short from the release to when this was announced.
Yeah, and this does not surprise me one bit. Like the launch came out of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
Was barely publicized, barely hyped at all. Still obviously very much a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
From just jumping in and checking it out.
Like we had, or at least I did. I had access. You did too. Like back in December.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, it just kind of came out in the beginning of March, which, I mean, we had early alpha access is what we had to essentially release, which that's not enough time at all for people to kind of get their hands in and find bugs to, you know, discuss about like UI improvements or, you know, just usability of something like this. And it surprised us very much when it's like, oh, it's just kind of there now. Okay, great. Here's the two feature sets of like, this is your, you know, your subscription base. Here's all the stuff you get, but there's really no more information than this is the stuff you get. And it doesn't really discuss how to do anything. It doesn't tell you, what some of the, like, the painted minis that you get. It's like it doesn't give you examples. It doesn't show anything. The only thing that we ever saw of it like actually working is a couple of videos that they put out, like of you know, some players just kind of seeing it for the first time, and then of course that live play that they had at the D&D live where they used it to just kind of, you know, show one room and like one battle.
Which would have, honestly, I think that hampered the live play in the second half more than it helped.
Yeah.
Which was very unfortunate because that was a really fun, like you had amazing people there. But essentially the news was broke by a LinkedIn post and where the person who had been laid off basically said, you know, most of my team was left go. Rascal News dived in to get some more details and revealed there was an internal memo forwarded to the publication by an employee who wanted to remain anonymous. But it read basically, after several months of alpha testing, we've concluded that our aspirations for Sigil as a larger standalone game.
It's not.
Don't like that wording. Don't like that wording at all. That's part of the problem. Standalone game with a distinct monetization path will not be realized. As such, we cannot maintain a large development effort, and most of the Sigil team will be separated from the company this week. We are proud of what they developed. Blah, blah, blah. To that end, we will transition Sigil to a D&D Beyond feature. We will maintain a small team to sustain Sigil and release products already developed at no additional cost to users. Which, to me, sounds like we're just going to release the stuff that's been made, and then it's basically going to go into maintenance mode.
Yeah, that is definitely what it sounds like. And, I mean, we as gamers have had some experience with things like this before, like certain Blizzard games that they've decided not to support anymore. And, you know, it just kind of stays in a certain state that it's in. Seeing it happen to something that
one hurts.
I know, I'm sorry, but it's an apt, you know.
Yeah. For those who have followed from the Heroes of the Storm days. Shout out to you.
Yeah. But it is, you know, exactly that. It's the game is out. Or the game. I see now they have me calling it a game. The tool is out, and all of a sudden, like, we don't need people with it anymore. This is it. This is what's going to happen. And immediately in my mind, it's like, okay, well, that means that they're not going to create any of the maps from, and like, how great would it be if they started inputting maps that were created from the modules in there to use?
I mean, that was the original intention, right?
Yeah.
Is that when new modules released, they were going to release a companion Sigil version of that with the encounters and areas pre-built.
Yeah.
So that you could just jump in and use them. I can almost guarantee you that will never happen.
Oh, it's not going to happen anymore. I mean, if 90% of the people who worked on it are just gone, who's going to sit there and like, okay, well, let me meticulously recreate this thing in Sigil when it's not even being supported? And especially with the map size being as limited as it is, some of those things are like huge, giant maps that there's no way that, you know, you'd be able to put it in there without any sort of extra added support to it. So like, that's a bummer. But the thing that really kind of gets me is we have a couple articles that we're going to link in the show notes, but one of them is a tweet or a post on Blue Sky. And basically, an anonymous employee who was laid off from the Sigil team said that the project's death was a combination of corporate disinterest and lack of vision from Hasbro, not from Wizards of the Coast, which, yay, because, you know, at least that gives Wizards of the Coast a little bit more like love for the people. But the fact that Hasbro looked at it as a game, you know, thinking this is the next Baldur's Gate or Dragon Age or something like that, not understanding that it's a tool to go along with the other stuff that we have, just really destroyed it. You know, like, yeah, we didn't want monetization of it, but if it's kind of what kept it going, then something there would be great. You know, just to have more, you know, more environments or custom built maps or, you know, minis or things like that. It makes sense that it needs some sort of monetization to get all the features and stuff like that, which again, I'm likening it to, if I'm playing in person, I'm buying miniatures. So I don't want.
Yeah. At this point, and they, even the leaked memo basically even adds, from the anonymous employee, Sigil was a confused and poorly communicated development cycle, one where corporate leadership was lacking. There's a distinct lack of interest from the word go. All the rumbling undercurrent of Wizards not knowing how to put a video game together, which again, was internally developed, not super great. When you have a team that is not used to making, you know, stuff in game engines and whatnot. Which, to be clear, Sigil was never going to be That didn't stop Hasbro from thinking it was cut from the same cloth. Hasbro treated Sigil like a video game instead of a VTT, and at no point cared to understand the difference. The company apparently expected Sigil to create revenue in a similar fashion to Magic the Gathering or Baldur's Gate 3 simply by existing. When that proved not to be the case, the employees at Hasbro pushed Sigil out of the nest and were uninterested if it managed to fly before crashing to Earth. The employee described a meeting only a month ago where Collins asked leadership about their vision for Sigil going forward, knowing no one was able to provide a clear answer.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's,
yeah. And this just makes me even more mad, because apparently, like, there's numbers floating around, and who knows, you know, what's real and what's not. But there was numbers floating around of $40 to $50 million. Over the last several years.
God, what waste.
What could that have done for D&D Beyond?
Yeah.
What could that have done for D&D Beyond? That's the thing that chaps my cheeks the most, Ben, is that
I can't believe that much was put into what we got.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, they had to spin up a brand new thing. There's a lot of new people. They're trying to figure out, you know, how to make things work. They're working with Unreal Engine. This is not a video game company. Mm-hmm. This is a tabletop RPG company. And your D&D Beyond expertise is completely different. That's web.
Yep.
It's all web-based. So yeah, it makes me really sad for what could have been. That's a massive amount of capital that even if you invested a fraction of that in D&D Beyond, it could be in a much better state than it is mm-hmm. right now. That's a lot of back end rewriting. Several million dollars could have funded a lot of back end rewriting for D&D Beyond.
Just a touch.
Just a touch. So yeah. little pissed about how honestly this all went down, and it really just reinforces how clueless Hasbro is and how poor of a parent company they are to Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is I'm mad too, but even more so I'm disappointed, because like, how often was I there? Have I said on this show, I am looking forward to this. This is going to be my 3D VTT I'm going to use. This is, you know, I'm super excited. Yay. You know, I'll pay for minis on this to, you know, help fund it and, you know, grow my collection and stuff. Like I was, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid, but apparently, I don't know. All the Kool-Aid packets are just gone now. Cause yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to try to transition into it. If there's no support, why am I going to put my time into it? So I'll just keep going with the baked in 2D map feature that D&D Beyond already has that I'm using already. You know, there's no reason to move.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just wanted to kind of, since we did cover it last episode a decent bit, we wanted to kind of cover the death knell.
It's been 2 weeks.
I know.
Isn't the last wild? Episode was it's out. Now this episode, it's gone.
Yeah, or essentially gone. You basically, it's for all intents and purposes, it's not worth putting time into.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is if suddenly millions of people started using it and then Hasbro's like, what, money? Ooh, let's do this now.
And it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. And even then, it's not going to be in any way that'll work. Like, is it maybe because they're like, yeah, Astarion and Karlach are in it. And like, those are part of Baldur's Gate. It's a video game. Like, the communication was completely dropped in there somewhere. You know, I don't know. It reminds me of like all the stupid questions that like older leadership people ask about like technology and not understanding at all about any of it. Yep. It's like own a company that does, you know, card games or tabletop games or RPGs and things like that. But have you ever taken the time to understand it, to know how to foster it? My guess is no.
Nope. Yep. We see this a lot. We see this a lot in tech. Mm-hmm. I work in tech. Yeah. See it a lot. So it is very sad. And I hope any additional efforts are redirected to D&D Beyond specifically.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to see that grow more.
All right. So with that bad news out of the way, let's talk about more bad stuff.
Oh,
specifically bad guys.
Oh,
We're going to talk a little bit about how to play bad guys.
Yeah.
And this is from a DM point of view.
Yeah. Definitely not we're not going, you know, I'm going to have an evil party member or something. No, this is, I need to have an adversary for my heroes.
Yeah. And playing bad guys well is hard.
Yes.
It's hard because very few of us are inherently bad people.
That's so true. I hope that's so true.
I hope that's the truth. I hope that's the truth. There are some, I'm sure, but hopefully most who are playing this game are not inherently bad people. And so that gives us kind of a conundrum of how to play a good villain.
Yes.
And I think it's the same type of conundrum a lot of people come across in video games, where it is very hard for them to play a bad playthrough.
Mass Effect for me.
Yeah, Mass Effect's a great example. A lot of people have a problem. There's a reason that Paragon is far higher played than Renegade, especially like deep Renegade, because sometimes people just find it hard to be like that, even when they're playing a game and a character. Same for Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. I have a like stalled out Dark Urge game in chapter 2.
Dark Urge.
And
yeah, that's a great example.
Going against the Druid Grove was the hardest thing I have ever done in a video game so far. Real rough.
Yeah, because it's like seeing all these consequences of your actions, but then being the person who's causing all the bad stuff to happen is very hard. It's very hard to do. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a few minutes and let's talk about how you can play good bad guys, because it's hard. Ben, why don't you kick us off? What do you do when you're developing a villain, and how do you play it well?
Well, a big part of it is kind of trying to determine what type of villain you want, because, you know, there's definitely different types. You know, there's the I'm just out for power, I'm greedy, you know, like the very simple motivating kind of things. But if you look at, you know, for some good examples, you know, the idea that everybody's the hero in their own story, you have to figure out what makes them think that they're doing the right thing, if you want to have like a good, complicated, complex character. So you need to find someone who has, you know, goals for themselves that are, you know, adverse to the general good. Whether that's, you know, someone who, you know, I need, like, the best example I can give is there was a, gosh, it was a like a 9-book Star Wars, well, set of books. I don't know what to call a 9-book trilogy. So there were 9 books. I think it was like the Legacy of the Force or something like that, whatever. It took place a long time after the original trilogy and all that stuff. It had to do with like Han and Leia's kid, Jason. This is all, you know, no longer canon stuff. And basically his fall to the dark side and following in Anakin's footsteps. And it was done by 3 authors, so it was a little disjointed here and there, but watching him kind of fall, but taking legal actions to do things, to gain more power, to, you know, rise up in government, and, you know, kind of having that mix between Anakin and like Palpatine, you know, pulling the strings of things because he thinks he's making a better world. He's making it safer. He's, you know, doing all these things when putting like, a, you know, like a basically a fascist state in Star Wars, where he's like the head of everything, because, you know, he knows better than everybody else. And one of the authors had just the best POV for him of really taking the time to like map out his trajectory, his goals, and his logic behind why this is the right thing to do. And if you're playing a character like that, you really need to get into that headspace to figure, you know, why am I doing this and why is it the right thing to do? And that can be kind of hard, especially if you just want, you know, like good classic kind of fantasy tropes of, you know, I'm the cultist and I want my evil god to come back. Well, why do you want your evil god to come back? I mean, generally when evil gods show up, things are bad for the world, you know, like demons are running around or, you know, all this other stuff. And you need to kind of get it to the point where they have some sort of idea of, I'm making the world better by doing this thing. You know, whether that's, again, some sort of cultist thing, or if you're, you know, rising to power or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think the hero of their own story is a really great way to go about villains. It gives a very, you can give them very clear motivations to what they're trying to achieve. And it gives a very believable reason that they're trying to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, Thanos is another really good example from.
Yes. Thanos Marvel. Is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is the hero of his own story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is the hero of his own story. He has a specific purpose he's trying to bring about, and he thinks it is for the greater good.
Yeah.
That he succeeds. So I think that's a great one. You can also just have the straight up, like, serial killer type villain.
Yep.
It's just like, there is no gray. I am bad. I do bad things. And that is the reason you want to stop me. Like, that is, it is, if you're looking for to do something very cut and dry, having just the, there is no gray area. This guy is just a terrible person who is doing terrible things. Then that is another solid, you know, villain choice. You can, like I said, serial killer, I think is a pretty good one, because like some of them might have like motivations, but very little of that is gray area. Like that's just straight up, like they're not going for a greater good or anything. We're not talking about Dexter.
well, even then, that's still serial killer, not even a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's a good way to have, like, I'm just an evil boss. I have evil minions. You have to defeat the evil minions and the evil boss before to stop the terrible things they're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, that could be like just a pure evil path for it, or it can be like totally cartoony, you know, like over the top evil.
Yeah. The cartoon villain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Skeletor who just, you know, I'm going to rule.
Yeah. Yeah. And just going to do it because he's going to do it type thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason.
Yeah, and sometimes those types of villains can actually be very fun to play, because you can have the big personality. And I guess let's talk a little bit about that, Ben, because we've talked about a little bit about some types, but playing them is a completely different thing. It's just like, it's the same conundrum of, I'm playing a very charismatic character, but I myself am not very charismatic. Or I'm playing a super smart character, but I don't consider myself super smart. And so how do you do that from a playing a villain perspective? And to me, I draw upon, and this can be good and bad. And again, we've talked about this session zero, continually keeping up to date, but drawing upon real world stuff. Yeah. Because that's some of your best examples, right? Of just people being bad. Like, history is littered with that. There's a lot you can learn from history, or even present day, where you can get that inspiration for the villain. And one of the reasons that I don't mind doing that is because, to me, you can give your players a sense of something to relate to, but then you can also give your players the ability to stop it.
Yeah.
Or to fix it, which they might not be able to do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that can sometimes be very therapeutic, sometimes very cathartic. And being able to make a difference somewhere in parallelism to what is going on, but then being able to go, my character is strong enough to fight this, or we can do this together as a team, or there's something we have to stop. We could never do this in real life, but our characters can put our heads together and fix this, or at least start tracking this down and trying to find a solution to this in our game.
Yeah. And actually, like, playing and voicing a character like this, it can be very challenging. I've had a couple villains in my campaign where, like, yeah, they're evil. You know, going from just a relationship with one of the characters, you know, it was a family or familial relationship, but this person had always kind of looked down on their family member, and they were rude with the things that they would say. They were short with them. They, you know, basically were just not nice. And luckily, I haven't had that experience with my family, so yay. But, you know, seeing things happen, you know, from stories from people, you know, whether it's friends or something, or different things on, you know, TV, you know, if you want to watch bad relationships, there's 100 sitcoms out there that have that you can, like, kind of pull from. And if you look at it from, like, the mean, like, undertone to, like, the stupid jokes and stuff, there's some really bad stuff out there that people can just, you know, that are just saying, and it's, you know, kind of supposed to be for a laugh. But when you get to the under kind of, like, the root of it, you realize there's some pretty deep bad stuff here. And if you kind of load some of that into your mind and kind of, you know, like, I don't know, like, stew in it for a little bit, you can kind of create the persona of someone who, you know, thinks little of, you know, certain characters or how they treat other people or something like that. Like, one of the best things that you can do just to give a very quick, oh, this person's a bad person, is have them react very poorly to someone who is serving them in some way. Like, it's one of those, you know, first date red flags. If you're at a restaurant and the person yes. you're with treats a server poorly, or, you know, thinks little of them and stuff, that's a bad person. I mean, just little tiny things like that are enough to just start kind of cluing you in into, oh, we need to watch this, or this person's bad. And I can tell you, like, playing that can feel really gross and icky sometimes. But then when you take the next couple steps and go deeper and more into it and worse into it, like when the last, you know, a few sessions ago, when I just kind of went full on, you know, you're not an elf, I'm super racist against you, get out of my country and stuff like that, it felt bad. I did not want to do that. It's not how I feel at all about anything. But it fit and worked for the story and put more motivation into my players to stop this oppression that's happening, or that's, you know, potentially growing in this area that they're in. So if you kind of, you know, definitely hold on to yourself in part of that, but understand that you're adding to the challenge and the motivation of your players, it makes it a little easier to kind of, you know, be that gross, sick kind of person. And then even more so, just for, like, your own safety at your own table, if it gets too much, you can stop. You, as the DM, also have the ability to say, hey, this isn't working. This isn't, you know, like, I can't do this right now. It's a lot. and things like that. It's perfectly fine to do that. So if you feel like you're going too deep, you're going full on Joker and you're like, I don't want to be in that headspace. You can just describe things that happened. You don't have to act it out and play it out and, like, you know, fill those shoes. There's a lot of different ways kind of around it, but use examples from media and everything like that to kind of craft the bad, evil person if you're going to try to inhabit that.
Yeah. It's like being a writer.
Yeah.
For a book, right? Most of these writers that write these incredible villains, sometimes horrific villains, are not terrible people at all. But they got into that headspace and then they wrote it down. And so it's basically you writing your side of the book. You're writing the evil side of the book while your players are writing the hero side of the book, right? For the most part. So that's something you can think about. And I want to just go back to something Ben said too, because I want everyone to make sure that they give themselves the permission to drop into description.
Yeah.
To pop out of character and go, the villain is doing this. And then they do this, or the villain tortures this person, without necessarily needing to go into all the description. Because I guarantee you, especially if you set the mood or set the character or set the scene, the players will just fill in those cracks, fill in those holes themselves.
Yes.
As you describe that. And that's how, like, sometimes you see this in movie making.
Oh, yeah. Where they'll cut away.
The cutaway can sometimes be worse than actually seeing it. I still think back to some of the scenes in The Dark Knight, like where Joker does the pencil thing. He doesn't show it, doesn't actually show it happening. But the way the buildup is, the way the sound is, the way the camera cuts just perfectly, like that to me was far worse than if I actually saw it happen.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
The best example that I can bring up is, if you ask anybody, they will say that they saw this happen, is in Psycho, when what's her face gets, you know, attacked in the shower. There is absolutely nothing there that is graphic, but because of the buildup and everything to it, people swear that they see the stabs and the attacks and everything. And none of that happens. But because it was just kind of, you know, danced about and left to the imagination, your brain fills in so much more in that. So being able to do that, especially by saying like,
oh, that's a tool you can use,
you know, Groncho the orc is torturing the elven bard. You don't need to say what happens, but all of a sudden it's like, what do you think a big giant orc is doing to torture this, you know, elf that's over there? Who knows?
Yeah, especially if in the lead-in to that you see torture implements, sharp needles, bone saws, and such in the lair. You see, like, a table matted with blood
and another body just like hanging in the background or something, you know, just like something along those lines. Just fill it with these horrible, you know, images without really giving the, you know, the final notation for it,
without you needing to go deep.
Yeah,
essentially. Yeah. So and again, I think that is a completely valid and sometimes a very effective way of playing a villain without dropping into like the R-rated gore and nastiness, right?
Definitely.
So there's I think there's a lot. It's always whenever I'm playing a scene with one of my villains, I always have to kind of transition my mindset, right? To this guy's slimy, this guy's smarmy, this guy is trying to put on a good face, but I'm keeping that under that undertone that makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. That's there's a lot of really fun things you can play around. And what I would do, especially if you are going to be playing one of your big villains, that's not just like your bandit or, you know, like a I don't know, something that's just inherently trying to kill you, like a purple worm or something like that.
They're usually not monologuing.
Yeah. In your prep time, think through lines. Think through things that villain might say. Mm-hmm. Think of situations that you might be in for your next session. I sometimes do this in the shower.
Yeah.
Where like I just like the day of or the day before, I'm just kind of practicing voices, or I'm practicing kind of like a monologue or something that the villain might say for a situation that I know has been set up in the previous session, and we're here and we're kind of they're kind of at that point. Practice. You don't necessarily have to go into the whole thing blind. Make some notes, right, on your villain's motivation. Make some notes on their character. Make some notes of like things they might say offhandedly, or if you can think of like really good one-liners that they might say after they perform a specific action or finish their evil deed or whatnot, write them down. Like that kind of stuff is really good, and then it can also help sell the character.
Yeah. And then I think one of the final pieces on this too is going to be running your very evil person in combat, because one, we have, you know, acting through it, you know, monologuing during combats, taunting, you know, doing all that really fun villain stuff that we like to do. But then we start looking at actions in combat and what you can do to really, you know, really push the fact that this person is evil. They are bad. You want your players to hate them. And some of these things I definitely recommend you only do for like a very big boss. And like the first thing is counterspelling revivify. Like hold that for the most evil of people, or, you know, healing magic, like anything along those lines, like negating that is an evil character, because again, we've talked about it many, many times, D&D, it's a cooperative storytelling game. And the DM wants their players to succeed as much as they do, but has to throw obstacles in their way. So when you're going up against like the worst of the worst, they are going to be some of the biggest obstacles. So doing things like that can really like add a ton of hatred for them, but just really kind of highlight how evil that they can be. On top of that, you know, especially if they're like commanding others, like focus firing on like the healer or something, or, you know, really thinking as strategically as possible about it, because remember, this is someone who is very evil. They probably have plans. They're working on, you know, towards goals. Even if they are just the full cartoony, I want to destroy the world kind of person, they're still working towards those goals. And your players are their obstacle. So they're going to try to, you know, strategize as best as they can. You know, one of the best ways is if they have encountered them before, or if they have, you know, any sort of like spy or infiltrator or anything to get information on them, you know, poke and prod them with, you know, lesser, you know, lieutenants or something along those lines to get information about how they fight, what they do, and all that. Like one of the things that's stands out to me for season one of Critical Role or campaign one is Raishan was with them during a big fight and knew that they have a hero's feast, you know, so they have mm-hmm. all these different buffs and stuff. And one of the things that she would do would dispel magic and remove those effects from them. And it's like a subtle, tiny little thing. But as soon as they went to, you know, roll a wisdom save at advantage and like, no, you don't get to, because that is gone. That's a real evil thing to do. You're taking away not player agency, but player reliance and safety that they thought that they had. And it, you know, doing things like that, really trying to strategize how the big bad would do things, can really put a huge memorable like villain into your game.
Yeah. Yeah. The smartest of villains, and the scariest of villains are always the ones that are the most strategic, and not the ones that are just like smash, smash, bam, whatever. It's the ones. Yeah. It's the ones that are counterspelling your revivify. It's the ones that stick the blade in an extra time after a character goes down to make sure they don't stand back up. It's the ones that cut off sources of help or, take advantage of player character's allies by doing something to them, right?
Yeah.
It's taking the things, it's looking at the character's backstories, taking the things the characters care about and putting them on full display of, I'm going to take this away from you, or I'm going to hurt this, or I'm going to remove this.
Yeah.
So something to think about.
If the evil character, like if your players actually still have family and the evil character learns about them, hostages are a really good way to be evil too.
Yeah. Threatening anything the players care about is a very good way to motivate the player character.
Yeah, like Moblin the Goblin, your little squire NPC that you picked up in session two. Like, that's a perfect thing to, you know, put in jeopardy.
Now he's in a cage in the back over hot lava. What are you going to do about that?
And the cage is slowly dropping.
Slowly dropping. That's right. But yeah, again, and also make sure, and I'm sure I've said this before, and this is something I try and do sometimes to a greater extent than others, but make sure you give yourself a cooldown period.
Yes.
After your session, make sure you have time to decompress, especially if you are going to have a heavy session, because sometimes being the bad guy can really take it out of you. Sometimes that can be a big, regardless of how the session went, sometimes that can be a big drain post session high. And so make sure that you give yourself some time to decompress, write down some notes, or just kind of, you know, write it out, or just give yourself go watch a comedy or something, something lighthearted after the fact to kind of, to decompress.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that palate cleanser to kind of, you know, come back to yourself sometimes.
Yep. But how about you? How do you play your villains? What are some of your best tips for playing villains, and making them believable while, not making things too horribly icky for yourself? We would love to hear them. Shoot us an email at dndiscussions@gmail.com. Join our Discord. Hit us up on Blue Sky. We'd love to hear from you. All right. So let's move on quickly to our community shout outs for this episode. The first one I found and I absolutely love, because there's a huge, I guess a hole would be the right word for it. But Alpha Stream, who does tons of game design, has a really good, fairly lengthy, actually, article about how to create monsters for the revised D&D 5e 2024 version, or 5.5. There are very, very few, and this is, I think, one of the Monster Manual and or DM's Guide's biggest shortcomings is there is very little information on how to create new monsters, especially within the CR template. And so in this article, there is just a massive amount of information, plus like CR averages and stat sheets and such, on how to create good monsters from scratch without having, with, since, you know, it's not actually in the book.
Mm-hmm.
If you like to homebrew, or if you want to create your own monsters, I cannot recommend this article enough. This will give you all the information and all the tools you need to get started in creating your own relatively well balanced for what their CR is monsters. So we will have a link to this article on the show notes at dudeanddiscussions.com. If that is interesting to you, I highly recommend you give this a read.
Yeah, it's very in depth. There's a whole chart and everything, but has like kind of a breakdown of each section of what you need to do, whether it's like hit points, ability scores, like attack bonuses, like everything's in there. It's very, very comprehensive and a very cool read. Like just kind of take a look and see some of the theory craft behind everything. I really like that.
Very cool. Ben, you had something as well.
So Nevermore showed me a TikTok creator like right before we started recording. So I haven't had a chance to really vet the whole thing, but I can recommend just from the video or two that I watched, the Blind Bard on TikTok. She is a blind tabletop player and also talks about, from what I've seen, like just kind of, general, this is how I how to do an NPC or make them memorable, little videos like that. But the thing that really caught my eye, really bad pun unintended, was basically how she does maps while being visually impaired. And there is a kit that she got. Horrible. I can't tell you what it's called because it's at the end of the TikTok and I don't want to play it right now. But it has a bunch of different like shapes and like kind of like different felt and like fuzzy and like different texture pieces. And she's able to kind of create a map using them because each symbol or shape or feel represents something different, whether it's like a locked door or a hallway or like a trapped room. And it's really kind of interesting to see, but even more so, we're all about inclusion of everybody because D&D is just a ton of fun, and getting different perspectives and ways to play is something that we definitely promote and want on D&D Discussions. I just wanted to share, again, the Blind Bard on TikTok. We'll have a link to her TikTok page, and there's some really cool stuff on there. I saw just a thumbnail of like Braille dice. I saw another video that she had of, it looks like, some sort of pixel dice or whatever, but it's connected to her phone where she'll roll it and then it'll, flash and stuff, but it also reads out what the roll is. So, she'll know what the number is and everything. So it's interesting stuff. So, we'll have that link as well and, check her out.
Very cool. I will definitely have to check that out. That might be the pixel dice. I remember backing that on Kickstarter several years ago. That has the option to hook in and read out, sync with your phone and read out rolls and stuff. Very, very cool.
Yeah. Speaking of those dice, I cannot wait till they arrive. They've had some really bad manufacturing issues with some of the colors. So
yes, they have.
I'm still like, the best thing is though, they're one of those Kickstarter companies or one of those companies on Kickstarter who they're really good about at least monthly updates so that you know what's going on. And the best part is
better late than never.
Yeah. But the best part is that like getting the full set now, there's so many improvements that have been made to like the little circuit boards and the way the lights are and stuff. So like I'm getting like version 4.0 or something like that. And it's going to be like way better than the initial release. So I'm like, it's going to be
pretty
Take your time. It's cool. You're making it better every single like go around that this update has happened. So
it's a super cool tool. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for someone who's visually impaired. So I think that's really, really neat. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, some cool stuff.
All right. And with that, that is the end of our episode. Of course, though, before we go, we usually like to talk a little bit about what we are doing in our own games. Unfortunately for me, several of my group were sick.
Oh, no.
The last time we were supposed to play. So we did not end up playing. So we will be playing next week at our regular scheduled time instead. But Ben, did you and your group get to play since the last time we talked?
Yes. Yes, we did. And we're playing again this upcoming Saturday. I'm really excited because, so last we left off, they were at the party, you know, kind of looking around some room, figured out where there's potentially something bad going on, but didn't get a chance to kind of break off. And it was great because, you know, everybody got together. They had dinner at this, you know, dinner party ball thing, and, some toasts were given that were, some of them were very much like coded into the whole, like, we should close our borders and foreigners are bad. And then other toasts were given from, you know, like one of the party members saying, like, you know, working together with these people from different nations has been some of the best times of my life. And like, just kind of like, you know, kind of subtly going back and forth, digging at each other and stuff. It was great. Absolutely fun RP. We had a great time with that. But here's the thing. So they're kind of going through this party. And the idea is that this is a kind of like a monthly celebration that happens in this elven nation where it's like a representation and appreciation of like art and music and things like that. So this mob boss who's hosting has recently come into a lot of different art and things like that. And, you know, because my group, you know, wanted to see some of the art around the house, they ended up working the whole situation so that everybody would be able to kind of go out and go on their own and look around and stuff, giving him that opportunity to kind of leave and, you know, explore this building that is, you know, locked off that no one's supposed to go in, that's, you know, guarded. But before that, my paladin walked over and basically was talking to the mob boss, you know, the big bad guy of all this that's going on, about a painting that he had acquired, and through their conversation it was basically, you know, talking about, oh yeah, you know, praise Corallon, which is like the kind of the elven god of the nation, you know, about art and music and things like that. And he kind of let it subtly slip that, you know, or whoever is, you know, guiding you through the light. Cause it's this picture of someone like on a boat, in a storm with light shining down and stuff. And so all that's kind of going on. And so then with the idea of like, okay, maybe there's something more in this painting here, they're kind of looking at it and realize that it's more of an effigy for, Bane, the god of tyranny. And they're like, oh, what's going on with this? And looking at some of the other artwork and everything, they kind of realize like, oh, this dude is not going for the normal elven, you know, elven deity here. And on top of that, he's one of the main supporters of like closing down the borders, of commanding and everything, and ended up talking to the current chancellor's daughter, family member talking to the current chancellor's daughter asking, well, when's your father going to retire? You know, kind of like trying to get information about when he can kind of weasel his way in and things like that. So with that going on, then my sorcerer, who is linked in like the chosen of Denir, you know, the god of like scholars and information and stuff like that, used her artifact to essentially get more information. And they've come to the conclusion that this mob boss has one of the artifacts that they're looking for, a sword called the Sword of Command. So some sort of tyrannical guy who worships the god of tyranny has a sword that makes people do things. So like, oh, this is, you know, pretty big and, you know, pretty big deal. And they're looking at him, and except his sword just looks like a nice plain, you know, sword that's just at his hip. His son has an exact matching one. So like, well, is he hiding it somehow with illusions? And when they walked into the manor, there is a, like, the threshold is magical to drop illusions. So like, yeah, but you know, why would he have that? And then they realize it's like, he's already inside. He can have something set up and, you know, there, and he's hiding this. And like, it was a big, huge revelation, which was like huge. And then they also used some wonderful charm spells and a fast friend spell, and also modify memory, and got into the storage room that was being guarded, where they found all the different merchandise and everything of people who were missing from the bazaar. And from there found a passage going underground into a laboratory of some sort, and then continued further into some caves, heard some shuffling, scritching noises, as well as run into the dragonborn glassblower that they ran into, who was just like, you know, master artist of her work. They found her, but she was basically a diamond statue. And this whole time they've been looking, you know, trying to discover why there are these barrels of diamonds that are like kind of in the shape of like broken body parts. So they're hearing something in that cave, and that's where we ended, with them finding their friend who is now a diamond statue. So I am super excited for us to pick up on Saturday, because this whole mystery has been going on for a while, and I have had a lot of fun kind of throwing it together and figuring it out, and adding different details, and, you know, like really tying it all in, especially since this whole arc and storyline was just kind of plucked out of nowhere as a, hey, I was in the hospital. We haven't been able to play for a while, so I'm just going to give you a really quick family story thing for a session. And it blew up into this, which has been great. And I've had so much fun doing that.
Yeah, this was definitely the like crazy side arc that developed off of a whim.
Yeah.
Type thing.
And this is one of the reasons why I love D&D so much. When I say collaborative storytelling, this is the stuff that I'm talking about, because I never in my wildest dreams thought, one, we would come to this country, or two, that this would turn into an important part of this arc of the story. And it's turned into something that is not only like interesting and, you know, effective of, you know, our player or of my players and their characters, but it's an integral part of the actual arc that's happening. So when I say let your players kind of lead the way and build, you know, it's like building the track or the road in front of them, you know, like 5 feet before they step on it. That's how it is sometimes. But when you are able to kind of get a little bit ahead, sometimes you can just create an entire city in front of them. And it is a master, just fun time for everybody.
So yeah, that is really cool. I'm very excited to hear how it goes after the next session.
Yeah. 'Cause
that sounds like you kind of ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I mean, if I remember correctly, when I told you about what happened, I'm just like, yeah, so we're going on a side quest. I have no idea what to do now. And it's turned into this. So
we're going on an adventure.
Let's look for treasure. Do, 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 do. Yeah, it's been great. Super happy.
Very cool. Very, very cool. I'm excited to hear what happens next, and I'm excited to get to play again, hopefully in a week or so.
Yeah,
with my group.
I'm really excited to hear kind of what's going on with yours, because you've had a lot of really like intense stuff happening too. So we need to get back into yours.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, I think we will call this an episode. Thank you everyone so much for joining us, for listening, for giving feedback, for chatting with us on Discord. We absolutely love doing it. And we love doing the show as well. Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached and where they can join the Discord as well, if they want to chat between episodes.
Oh yeah, definitely. So the best way to find us is going to be on dndiscussions.com. There we have a link to our Discord, so you can join, give us a talk. We have a great group of people there who are, you know, discussing things. Sometimes people ask for advice or ideas, you know, bounce things off of each other. We have some fun D&D memes that are thrown in here and there and stuff. It's a great place. Definitely recommend it. It's on dndiscussions.com. We'll have a link in our show notes. Some other links that you'll find there, though, are actually our Blue Sky pages. If you're wanting to follow us on Blue Sky, you can find the show itself at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord, and I am at Ben Bumhofer. You can, you know, reach out there. We'll definitely see what's going on and all that fun stuff. But if you're kind of shy, you don't want to, you know, talk to us directly where other people can see you or whatever, you can always send us an email and send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We are happy to hear from you. And, you know, if you send us a question there, there's a good chance it's going to end up on the show as a topic of conversation. We've done that quite a few times, and it's always been, you know, a great time talking about, you know, listener questions and stuff. So definitely check that out. Aside from that, though, if you want to listen to me play some Dungeons & Dragons, you can definitely check out the Plus 5 to Hit podcast. Right now, we are in an interlude from our end of the Rime of the Frost Maiden campaign. Right now, I'm actually DMing, and it takes place actually in my campaign world, but you know, in a different area. The first episode that I've done is out, and the next one I've told episode 2 should be dropping any day now. By the time this episode is out, I think episode 2 of my Tales of the Shimmer Guard, if you're looking for it specifically, should be out. So definitely check it out there. You can hear me DM. If you want to hear me as a player, listen to Rhyme with the Frost Maiden. Lots of fun stuff. But that being said, again, dndiscussions.com. You can find all of our stuff there. And yeah, that's about it. So, you know, I got to close off by saying, everybody, thank you very much for listening. All the support is great. We love talking to you. And again, we love hearing your stories, so make sure to keep sending those in. Ryan, thank you for joining me tonight. It has been a blast.
Always a pleasure.
Kind of going down that evil path with you. It's been nice. Very nice. And with that, until next time, everybody, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.